What Women Must Know with Sheryl Selman, Mondays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome, everyone, to What Women Must Know. This is a show about holistic perspectives and solutions for women's health matters. I'm your host, Dr. Sheryl Selman. I'm a naturopathic doctor, author, lecturer, radio host of another show every Sunday at 4 p.m. on this network, a call-in show called The Women's Healing Circle, and a very passionate advocate for women's holistic health solutions. And, you know, this is a great show because it's an opportunity to have an exploration and in-depth conversation into subjects that women must know. And we've certainly been having some wonderful conversations every week. And hopefully you are listening and taking advantage of the insights and the solutions that are being provided by the guests that are leading thinkers, authors, researchers in the field of holistic health, particularly addressing the unique needs of women. And I want to just put a little plug in for a few things. First of all, twice a year I return to the Big Apple. I speak at the Natural Gourmet Institute. And it's coming up once again, November 20th, which is a Saturday from 2 to 5 p.m. It's a full 3 hours of, I trust, will be really inspirational information, how to get your hormones back on track naturally. So we'll be revealing what we really need to know regarding our hormones at every stage of our life and the practical strategies of what we can do to not only get our hormones balanced, but really our hormones and what's going on with our hormones are an expression of deeper root cause issues. So we'll be certainly exploring those root cause issues so you can get your entire health back on track. Anyway, just call the Natural Gourmet Institute and you can get more information or register. Also, the other thing I'm really excited about, we're starting our third class on the Turn Back the Clock teleseminar series, which is subtitled How to Rejuvenate Your Hormones, Your Health, and Your Life Naturally. It's been a really successful program. We've had some wonderful and inspiring presenters, and this week we will have another wonderful woman who is a gynecologist, Dr. Helene Leonetti. She actually conducted some of the key studies on the benefits of natural progesterone cream for bone health. She's a fascinating woman and the kind of gynecologist we all are looking for, so come and join us. All you need to do is to sign up at the website healthywomanseminar.com. That's Healthy Woman Seminar. It's live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, but here's the big but. It is recorded, and you can listen to it whenever you want. So just sign up, whether you can be there in person or not. You don't have to miss out on this great information, which really is designed to empower us so we can make the most informed decisions possible. I hope you will be coming along every Tuesday or whenever to gain this wonderful treasure trove of wisdom and information. So I think, okay, I've got all that out of the way. You know, for close to 5 years, I have been really aware of a looming public health crisis. You know, it's not a disaster. And so I've investigated this area. I talk about it. I've written about it. And I think more than ever, we need to be alert to a serious, serious issue that is going on with all of us. Fact with all of us on the planet. Few of the world's 4 billion cell phone users question whether these universal gadgets are safe. In fact, these devices that we hold to our heads and keep in our pockets work like miniature radio stations that radiate microwave energy. U.S. cell phone safety standards, set almost three decades ago, prior to the era of handheld wireless technology, assumed that the average call was less than 6 minutes. That bears little in common with what's really happening today, where the average smartphone time of use or user, more than half of them are under the age of 20 and are using them for hundreds, maybe thousands of minutes a month. And, of course, the brains of anyone who is in their 20s or younger are still developing, and their skulls are more susceptible than adults to what is going on. So here we are living on a planet. Listen to that, 4 billion cell phone users in less than 30 years. We've gone from zero to 4 billion. Now, that may be wonderful because we have certainly made these indispensable devices part of our life. However, there is a dark side to this issue. And I know if you've been listening to the show, we've been talking to a number of people over the last several months about it. And today we're really, really fortunate to have with us Dr. Devra Davis. Let me just tell you a little bit about Devra. Those of you who have not met Devra before, this is going to be such a wonderful opportunity, and even those of you who have, even better. So Dr. Devra Davis is a scientist, professor, speaker, and acclaimed author, and recently testified before a United States Senate committee panel about the dangers of cell phone use. Her first book, When Smoke Ran Like Water, was a National Book Award finalist. And she is a visiting professor at Harvard University and Georgetown University. And I have to say, she's a passionate advocate for awakening us to the dangers that are occurring in our environment. And Dr. Devra Davis, thank you so much for being with us today.
Inviting me.
Well, I know you're really on this tour, traveling all over. You know, I was flicking the channels a couple of weeks ago, and just so happens I was on the C-SPAN station that had the book interviews, and guess who was there?
Yep.
And you did a magnificent job. That was a fantastic interview, and I was so excited because I go, oh, there's Devra. She's going to be on my show. Can't wait. So I do appreciate the time. I know you're gallivanting everywhere, so your time is very precious, and let's make the most of the time we have together. You know, you're an epidemiologist. You've pulled the whistle on several issues over the years, I gather. And how did you get to make this one of your causes?
Well, as a matter of fact, in my other book, The Secret History of the War on Cancer, I was focusing on why did it take us so long to finally act on tobacco, on benzene, on hormone replacement therapy, and a number of things that we know can be dangerous. And I determined that there was really a pattern here. When evidence first came out that something was a hazard, studies would be done, and they would be done, and they would be redone, and the existence of these studies was used to delay acting to control hazards. I became concerned about cell phones, but frankly, at the time I first got interested in it, I owned three of them. And I was a pretty heavy user, and I thought of myself as being pretty sophisticated. So when I first heard the possibility that cell phone radiation could be dangerous, I didn't believe it, and I didn't want to believe it because I was a pretty big user myself. I still use a cell phone today, but I use it in a very different way. I use it with a headset, with a speakerphone, with earpieces. I would never keep a phone next to my body or next to my brain, which is something that many countries do advise. But I got interested in the issue because in the beginning, I didn't believe it was physically possible for cell phone radiation to cause any problem. After all, non-ionizing radiation from a cell phone is so weak, it's like throwing a marshmallow at a tank. Well, that's true, but it's not the whole story. It turns out that microwave radiation from cell phones can damage DNA, can cause a host of other problems, and I became very interested in how it was that the American public, and indeed publics in most of the countries that are using phones, are so uninformed about these issues. Well, gosh, lots of questions I have about that one. So first of all, we need to acknowledge, and I think this is a really important point that you just made, there are countries around the world that actually publicly state the dangers and risks. In fact, advise certain aspects of the population not even to use the phone, like with pregnant women. So these countries are clearly aware and have obviously been convinced that this is a problem. So two-part question. What are other countries stating about the risks from exposure? And are we going to hear anything soon in this country? Are we hearing anything about it?
As you know, the Israelis and the Finns are two countries with very sophisticated reliance on radar, which, after all, is what microwave technology is. And these countries have also been using cell phones for much longer than we have. The Scandinavian countries in general, Finland in particular, and they have issued warnings advising that children not generally use cell phones, that they use them with headpieces and speaker phones, and that you can minimize your direct exposure to the body. In addition, in France last year, they passed a law making it illegal to design a cell phone for young children and market or advertise phones to young children, and setting goals that children not use cell phones, certainly not as widely as we do in this country. Now, the French law was passed last year. It hasn't been implemented yet, but the law simply states that all cell phones must come with warnings and must come with headsets so that people understand that a phone should not be held directly next to the brain or on the body. Interestingly, in the United States today, if you read the fine print warnings that come with all the smartphones, those phones tell you that if you keep an Apple IV in your pocket, you can exceed the FCC exposure guidelines. In fact, as you indicated in your comment, the guidelines for exposure for cell phones were set close to three decades ago and actually set based on a very tall, heavy-set man with an 11-pound head who actually didn't speak very much at all. Today, the average cell phone user might use a phone for at least half an hour a day. And many people are using a phone for hours a day. And standards were not set for those heavy users.
You know, when I first became aware of this issue, I'd look around, and I think, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago, it was never considered cool to give a child, you know, a 12-year-old, a 13-year-old, their own phone. You know, it was uncertain if it was safe, but it was also the cost, and there were lots of reasons. So that was a no-no. But I look around these days, and I see these 10-year-olds with their own phones. I'm just so horrified at what we are doing. It's like we're little frogs cooking away, and no one here in this country, other than devoted people like yourself trying to get a message out, it's like David and Goliath, right, are really doing their best to alert people. We've all been so convinced that this is the best thing since sliced bread. We're even letting our little kids, I see 1- and 2-year-olds talking on their cell phones to whoever, grandparents, fathers, mothers, whatever. And I just sit there going, oh my gosh, if they only knew.
Well, Senator Tom Harkin actually convened a hearing before the U.S. Senate last September, just a little more than a year ago. And he and Senator Spector examined what was known on the science at that time, and they had experts from the Finnish Nuclear Regulatory Agency and from Israel's Health Ministry and myself, as well as an expert from the Environmental Working Group and a representative from industry. And we all spoke about what was known about the dangers of cell phone radiation. And Senator Harkin himself at the hearing held up a cell phone with a corded headset and said, this is what I do. And he was quite right that that's what people should generally do. We talked at that hearing about the fine print warnings that now appear with phones. For example, with a BlackBerry, you're supposed to hold it 0.98 inches from the body. Now, those fine print warnings can be found on my website at environmentalhealthtrust.org. I actually have posted all the fine print warnings for all the current smartphones. But the issue really is this. If it's okay to put a fine print warning in the packaging of the phone that you see after you've purchased the phone, then why shouldn't people have a right to know that before they make that purchasing decision? In fact, in San Francisco, the mayor, Gavin Newsom, passed a law, passed 10 to 1 by the city government, in favor of the citizens' right to know that cell phones are basically two-way microwave radios that should never be held directly next to the brain, and that people have a right to know how much radiation they do emit. That law, a similar proposal, has been advanced in the state of Maine by Andrea Boland, a very courageous and recently reelected state legislator for the state of Maine. And similar proposals are wending their way now through legislatures and city governments in Pennsylvania, in New Mexico, in Arizona, in Oregon, and in other towns in California as well. So I think we are seeing interest in the United States legislatively as well, and there are growing numbers of people who are concerned about this. The Environmental Working Group has done an excellent job of alerting people to the fact that cell phones emit radiation, and we're now working to do a better job as well in getting that information out to the public.
And just as an aside, isn't the cell phone industry actually suing the San Francisco City Council?
Yeah. The San Francisco story is quite amazing because, as you may also know, Gavin Newsom recently got elected lieutenant governor.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
And, I think that's going to augur very well for this issue.
Oh, that is interesting. So let's start at the beginning for people who are listening, who may be skeptical, who maybe never even thought about it, or maybe do have some concerns. From your research, and by the way, I do want to mention that you're on this national speaking tour because you have recently released your latest book called Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation, What the Industry Has Done to Hide It, and How to Protect Your Family, really powerful and essential reading. So out of your very extensive research, Deborah, what are the real health risks from the use of wireless technology? And maybe the first thing in this part of the conversation is define what are we talking about when we say wireless technology? What are the devices we need to be concerned about?
Well, first of all, I'm focusing in my book, Disconnect, on cell phones. That's the focus of the book. Others are talking about things like baby wireless monitors, which use the same microwave radiation that cell phones use. But my concern is focusing on cell phones and the fact that children and all of us should not be holding a two-way microwave radio next to the brain. The reasons why I say that is that we have evidence now from studies of DNA damage. We look at cell cultures taken from animals and humans, and we see evidence that those cells can be damaged by the same kind of signals that come from today's smartphones. We have studies that have also looked at the blood-brain barrier experimentally, and those studies have shown that cell phone radiation can weaken the barrier that forms with the blood and the brain. So we have lots of evidence experimentally, and in my book I document that not all the evidence shows that kind of effect, but the reality is that the industry has done something here that's been very questionable in that they have hired researchers, often funded them very well, to do studies to try to undermine the science whenever there's been a hazard identified. And that pattern of hiring and targeting research to undermine science is a pattern, unfortunately, that we saw for tobacco for years, as well as for benzene and vinyl chloride and other hazards. So we know that if you can undermine the science on the dangers of asbestos, as that industry did for years, people remain confused and we continue to use a product assuming that it must be safe, and the existence of uncertainty and confusion about the science becomes an excuse for continuing to use the product without thinking about it. In fact, at this point, I am on quite a tour with my new book, and it was just released last week in England. In England, in the year 2000, Sir William Stewart headed a national commission for the British government that looked at all of the evidence at that time. That's now 10 years ago. And the Stewart Commission issued a stunning report that advised that children not use cell phones and urged caution for other people as well. And the basis for that caution was, again, the sum total of the experimental evidence as well as the human evidence that we need to look at very, very carefully.
I have a question. First of all, you're focusing on cell phones. Do you put our wireless phones at home, you know, the cordless phones in that category as a cell phone?
A cordless phone really does work like a cell phone. In fact, with one difference, the base station is constantly on. So if you have a cordless phone in your home, take it out of your bedroom. Do not keep it near your head. And the Israeli government has recently issued warnings that people get rid of their cordless phones. And I think that's a good idea for two reasons, one of which is security. When electricity goes down, your cordless phones will not have power to continue to work. So you need to be mindful of that problem. And secondly, they do emit low doses of this radiation 24/7, and that's not something that we ought to tolerate as well, which is why the Israeli Health Ministry issued a warning about cordless phones also.
Right. I think people are under the illusion that a cordless phone is somehow different from a cell phone and therefore doesn't pose the same risk.
They are different, but it does pose a very similar risk. And in fact, research has shown this. Studies done by Leonard Hardell in Sweden have examined the biological impact of cordless phone radiation, looking at studies of people who have been using these phones for 10 years or more. And those studies have found that after 10 years of heavy use, there is a doubled risk of certain types of brain tumors. And in fact, the heaviest users have even a greater risk. Interestingly, Hardell's work on cell phones has shown that people who start to use cell phones heavily as teenagers have 4 to 5 times more brain cancer by the time they reach the end of their 20s. And we think this is consistent with what we know about the teenage brain. Teenagers' brains are continuing to develop. Their skulls are thinner. Their brains contain more fluid. And as a consequence, they may absorb more radiation. A child's brain, a 5 or 10-year-old child's brain, can absorb 2 to 3 times more radiation than an adult's.
Yeah, that's such a terrifying statistic. And I have to say, and this may be your experience as you're traveling around, but I actually have met people. I've had patients and friends, work colleagues, who have had brain tumors, parotid gland tumors, directly related to the exposure to the phones. I mean, those are the most obvious things. But, of course, we know there are many, many other subtle effects that people don't generally even connect with the exposure to their cell phones.
Yes, in fact, memory loss is one of the things that has shown up in animal studies, and it's been has shown up as well in studies that were done in other countries. In particular, a distinguished researcher in Greece named Lucas Margaritis, working with Adamantia Fragopoulou, has shown effects of cell phone radiation on worms, on rats, on mice, as well as on the tiny fruit fly. They've shown that cell phone radiation can shrink the ovaries and testes of the fruit fly. And we're talking about doses of radiation just like those emitted by phones. We're not talking here about high doses. In addition, they've shown effects on memory in humans as well. And other studies have experimentally shown this, that if you expose human volunteers to cell phone radiation, it actually does improve their brain. It makes people faster, but they make more mistakes. Think about that the next time you're driving.
Right. It's actually scary to think of people.
I'm especially concerned about, and have written on my website, environmentalhealthtrust.org, about babies and iPhones, which I think is truly a horrifying combination. People are downloading apps of white noise or baby sounds or little games for babies to play. These are children 6 months and older. And then handing them iPhones to play with or putting them under their pillow, under their crib. This is a bad idea for a lot of reasons. A number of pediatricians, such as Dr. Harvey Karp, the author of the Happy Baby book, have joined me in warning about this problem of exposing the very young brain to radio frequency signals. If you have to give your child a phone, certainly disconnect it with the wireless device, because there's nothing good about exposing a young child's brain to radio frequency signal from a cell phone.
You know, I'm going to bring up this question, and then we'll probably have to go to a break after you give your answer. But speaking of the iPhone, I recently was shocked to learn that because the whole back of the iPhone is an antenna, that even if you turn off the iPhone, totally turn it off, off position, it has the ability to transmit these frequencies, picking it up. Have you heard that? Do you know anything about that? Is that
if the phone is on airplane mode, then it's not receiving signals, so you're not getting information into it. If the phone is on standby mode, which is not an airplane, but just you're not talking, but it's on, it's constantly seeking a signal to the next tower. And because the antenna runs all around the perimeter of the phone, the exposure is going on all the time. If you're telling me that the phone, when it's totally off, is emitting something, that's not something I'm familiar with.
Okay,
they,
well,
I'm not aware of that.
Okay, if I find the literature where I found that, I'll send it to you.
Very interested to see it.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, well, this is probably a good moment. Let's take a break. We'll be back in just a little bit. Don't go away because we are having a really, really important conversation with Dr. Deborah Davis, author of Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation, What the Industry Has Done to Hide It, and How to Protect Your Family. See you in a moment.
Progressive Radio Network, information for the independent mind.
What will be the impact of the Tea Party on the upcoming midterm elections? Who are these Tea Partiers? Are they really only a bunch of right-wing rednecks? Listen in every Thursday night from 7 until 8 Eastern to A More Perfect Union as your host, Bill Thompson, gets the inside stories from actual Tea Party players. Call in with your comments and questions, challenge guests, or show support. A More Perfect Union, Thursday nights, 7 until 8, only on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
This is Glenn Ford. Join me and co-host Nellie Bailey every Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Black Agenda Radio, an hour of news, analysis, and commentary from a black left perspective. That's Black Agenda Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, this is Adam Kolker from the Brooklyn Jazz Underground. We're going to be hosting a weekly show every Tuesday at 5 p.m., focusing on sounds coming from the borough of Brooklyn. We'll be playing some new releases, doing live interviews, some live performances, maybe even venture out into music from some of the outer boroughs. Brooklyn Jazz Underground, Tuesday at 5, only on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Mitchell J. Rabin to tell you that we have two new time slots. Every Monday and Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Progressive Radio Network. Join me as I interview and dialogue with the sung and unsung heroes of society with passion and with commitment. Scientists, healers, filmmakers, musicians, environmentalists, and gurus on Mondays, and a call-in show where you'll be the focus on Wednesdays. Again, Monday and Wednesday at 6 p.m., join Mitchell Rabin as together we create a better world.
To the Progressive Radio Network, celebrating 5 years of independent points of view.
Hello, and welcome back to What Women Must Know with Dr. Cheryl Selman. It's good to have you joining us once again. Back to this after the show, we have Dr. Deborah Davis speaking with us today and discussing her research in her latest hot-off-the-press book, Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation, What the Industry Has Done to Hide It, and How to Protect Your Family. Now, I want us to get into the section of your book that highlights what the industry has done to hide it, because I think people need to understand there are lots of dirty tricks going on here. But before we leave the topic we're on to get there, Deborah. Can you just talk a little bit more about some of the concerns you have about the potential for a growing epidemic? You talked a bit about brain cancer, but there are other cancers that also, and other health challenges that are related, including potentially another form of diabetes, type 3 diabetes I've been reading about. Do you have some other things you want to share about some of your concerns?
I think probably the thing that most young men need to know is that a number of studies have been done in several different countries and that have found the following thing. If you take samples of sperm from healthy men and you split them into two, and you expose one sample to cell phone radiation and another sample you do nothing with, the sperm will all die because that's the nature of sperm. But the sperm that is in the test tube exposed to cell phone radiation will die faster, and the sperm count will drop more quickly. There will be basically four times less sperm when it's exposed to cell phone radiation, and the sperm will have properties of being sicker. Now, that's experimental work done with real live human male sperm. In addition, studies have been done of men who show up at fertility clinics. And when men have fertility problems, it's often been associated with their use of cell phones. Keeping a cell phone in your pocket is not a good idea. Men who've used cell phones for 4 hours a day or more, and growing numbers of them do, have half the sperm count of others in several different studies done at the Australian National Research Center, at the Cleveland Clinic, at major research centers in Turkey and in Greece as well. So there's a lot of concern about the effects of cell phone radiation on sperm count, which of course affects the ability of young men to have children when and with when they choose to do so. I think other effects have been shown on memory. Studies have been done in animals and in humans showing an effect on the ability to recall and find things. In the animal studies, which are probably most stunning, animals are starved and taught to run a maze for food. So they get a big incentive. At the end, when they run the maze correctly, they get fed. You take the same animals, after you've taught them to run the maze, deprive them of food again, but also expose them to cell phone radiation, and they get lost. So cell phone radiation is affecting the memory of rodents, and its studies have been done with humans in terms of number recall and the like, and it's also having an effect on them. Now, as to this type 3 diabetes, I think you know more than I about it, but the issue has been suggested that cell phone radiation looks like it's affecting metabolism and glucose metabolism in particular, and insulin intolerance. So we are seeing growing array of impacts of cell phone radiation throughout our lives, and that's why I think it's important for everyone to know you need to use a cell phone safely, which is what we urge as part of the Campaign for Safer Cell Phones, which you can join by going to our Facebook, Campaign for Safer Cell Phones, or join us at Twitter at Safer Phones to get information about ways you can use phones safely.
You know, what I find the worst about this technology, it's insidious, because you may start finding your memory is not as sharp. You may find you're more fatigued. You may find you have sleep issues. You know, but you don't necessarily make the connection that it's the exposure that's happening on a daily basis to your cell phone that could be a major contributor. You know, most people don't get that.
Of course not, and actually most physicians don't know anything about it as well. So one of the things that we're doing with the nonprofit that I've started, Environmental Health Trust, is working to give continuing medical education programs to physicians. The inaugural lecture for the book was held at Georgetown University at the School of Foreign Service, and that lecture, by the way, can be seen at C-SPAN. If you go to our website, environmentalhealthtrust.org, that entire talk, which you happen to find on C-SPAN, can be seen there. They still have it up, as well as a new report will be coming out in Time magazine. So we're getting some traction in the national media now on this issue, and I'm frankly encouraged by that and by the fact that Senator Harkin has indicated an interest in examining the issue further. And indeed, no matter what's going on with the new Congress, I think that this issue is one that cuts across the political spectrum, because I've been talking to conservatives in England as well as in the United States who are quite deeply concerned about what this means for our health and that of our children and our grandchildren.
Well, that's it. You know, forget about your political persuasion. It's health. And it's health of everyone. Everyone's health is being challenged, and so that gets people's attention. You know, and I just want to really congratulate you for taking on this issue, because you have the credibility to get people to listen to you. And I know there are many people out there trying to get the message out, but it takes someone like yourself, Deborah, who has great respect in the scientific community and obviously in other governments, that can talk to people and they will pay attention. So I just, you know, personally thank you for taking on this cause. It's never easy, you know.
I want to thank you for bringing it to the attention of your listeners and for your own interest. There's a new book that I have not read by Anne Louise Gittleman that's called Zapped, and I think she does a job of talking about the broader issues here as well. And I think it's important for people to recognize that there are things they can do to reduce their exposure. Having said that, I also want to recognize that cell phones do play a positive role in emergencies, in medical emergencies in particular. Cell phones have changed our ability to respond quickly, but we need to be smarter about how we use them. There's no question about that. And I think that we need to recognize there are a lot of frivolous uses now. The idea that you're going to make your child safe from kidnapping by giving your five-year-old a cell phone is preposterous. If, God forbid, there were a kidnapper, they'd take the cell phone and toss it away. I mean, you're not going to create a child that's capable of resisting that. The reality is, although kidnapping is a horrible thing, it's not that common, and we're feeding on people's fears by even proposing that you're going to make your child safe by giving them a cell phone. Children need parents, and they need people to provide guidance to them if their parents can't. A cell phone is unlikely to be able to do that.
I agree. And by the way, you'll be pleased to know I had Anne Louise on the show last week. I just feel that we just need to be communicating and educating people as much as possible. So we're all doing our little piece to awaken people. So your basic recommendations for anyone using a cell phone are what?
Use a headset. Use a speakerphone, and do not keep the phone next to your brain or next to your body. Young men, take that phone out of your pocket right now. You have to put it on your desk, put it next to you, keep it a few inches away, put it in a fanny pack, in a backpack, and use a headset. I think it's really important for people to understand that distance is their friend here. And there's something really radical that all of us can do, which is turn your phone off. You don't really need to be on 24/7, most of us. And we've got to disconnect ourselves from this feeling of urgency, this sense of fear that makes us think that at any moment we have to get that phone call about some new horrible thing that's happening. I think that that's a larger part of what we as a society have to address. In fact, as I said, cell phones have constructive roles to play, but we have to realize that they shouldn't be running our lives. We have to set some standards and some limits ourselves. And there's a rudeness that's crept into our civil discourse where people think nothing of answering their phone, looking down at their phone while you're talking to them, having a conversation. And I think we need to establish new norms of what civil behavior is in civil society. And by my way of thinking, it should not be that it's okay for someone else to be interrupting my conversation with you at any time merely because your phone is ringing or an email has come in. And really ask yourself this. Do you really have to be checking your email while you're standing in the grocery line? Do you really have to figure out somebody else you've got to call while you've got a few minutes while you're taking a walk? I think these are some of the considerations that we have to have more of a national conversation about, and recognizing that cell phones play positive roles, but in the other hand, they've actually diminished family time and had impacts in ways in personal lives that we need to start to rethink.
Well, absolutely. You know, I when you're talking about guys taking it out of your pocket, I just think of all those men that have their little holster, you know, that's on their belt. And they're carrying it around all the time and
right.
Zapping. themselves.
Asked me about the industry, and I want to take a moment now to talk about that, if I may, because I am going to have to cut our call a little bit short because of some things that have come up on my end. But I want to just, I know you can do an excellent job of talking about this issue since you've been following it, as you say, for 5 years. My own concerns about industry, really, I was stunned to find out that in 1994, Henry Lai produced a study showing, with stunning work, that cell phone radiation could basically fragment DNA. He showed this in very important work, developing what became known as the Comet Assay, a measure of the ability of anything to affect the integrity of DNA. And although this is a very difficult assay to do well, it's now been automated. But when he first did it by hand, the results were quite clear. He showed that pulsed digital signal from a cell phone could damage DNA. And when that result first appeared, it was presented, as scientific meetings often are, to other scientists through poster sessions and abstracts. Industry immediately realized there was a problem. Remember, this is 1994. Cell phones are not being widely used, but the intent was there to introduce them broadly. So what they did was two things. They went to the university where Henry Lai was employed and tried to get him fired. They then wrote to NIH that had funded his work and accused him of fraudulently using funds to do this work. And when those things failed, they then hired a public relations firm and tried to get the public relations firm to, quote, war game the science. And the memo about this is on my website and was reported by Microwave News, Louis Slesson, who's followed this issue more thoroughly than anybody has through in the entire world. And that shows that the memo went from Motorola to Burson Marsteller, hiring them to war game the science on Henry Lai's work. Now, in my book, I also show that industry then went out and hired another scientist to try to discredit this work, a fellow named Jerry Phillips, then working for military as well as for industry. And Jerry Phillips is an honest scientist. He showed that, in fact, what Henry Lai and Vijay Singh had produced, namely the damaging effects of cell phone radiation on DNA, he showed that it was true. And he didn't back down from those findings. Now, I think the clearest evidence we have of how industry works in this situation is that Jerry Phillips is no longer doing research in this field. And frankly, neither is Henry Lai. I think Henry Lai deserves enormous credit from all of us for the breakthrough research that he did and for his persistence in continuing to do this important scientific work despite the opposition of industry at the time.
You realize the power of politics and money when it comes to these issues, and they always, you know, in the past, let's just say, have trumped public health. And do you think that with the work you're doing and the ear you're getting from powerful, influential people and, you know, governments, that there will be some responsibility taken around this issue?
I think it's happening. I think that's one reason that my book is getting the traction that it's getting. It's one reason why Time Magazine picked it the week that it came out as the number one pick of the week. And it's why it's already in its second printing in less than a month out of publication. I think the public is hungry for information. I think people understand that we need to be smarter about using this technology, and we need to recognize its strength and continue to improve its use. I know that industry can make safer phones. I know they hold patents on safer phones, and they're beginning to roll them out. The problem is they don't want to admit the newer phones are safer than the others, because that would then acknowledge what we know to be true, which is that older phones were more dangerous. That doesn't mean new ones are safe. It certainly does not mean that anyone should be holding a phone next to their brain or body. But we do know that there are smart things we can do to make ourselves healthier and safer. And I really want to thank you for the effort that you've made to bring this issue to the public attention that it requires. We are transforming our society. We have used this technology to some advantages, but we are also allowing it to take over our lives in ways that are not constructive, and I think it's important to get this information out to the public. And again, I really appreciate what you're doing, and I hope you will link to our website, environmentalhealthtrust.org.
Absolutely. And by the way, did you hear the news report that cell phones are banned on the climb to Mount Everest?
No, I did not hear that. Really interesting.
Yeah, that was last week in the news. No one who's making that climb is permitted to use their cell phone while you're heading to the top. So there you go.
Wow. Well, I think that's really quite interesting. I'm sure that the guides will have what they need for safety purposes for communication. But I think that's a very interesting comment.
Yeah, I just thought that was, you know, that's the state of affairs, you know.
Right.
You can't even climb Mount Everest without getting your cell phone calls or checking your text messages or whatever. Oh, okay, so do you still have a few more minutes or do you have to go, Deborah?
I have to go. Let me leave you with one thing that is true. In cases of emergency, cell phones have been very useful in helping people to locate people and respond to emergencies. But we really do need to question whether we all need to think of ourselves as always being in a state of emergency. And that's what cell phones do to us. You know, the real surge in cell phone popularity came after 9/11, when all of us were stunned, frankly shocked, and terrified, and wanted to know where is our loved one when this horrible thing hit. And it's understandable that that gave a lift to this technology. But we have to realize that although we still remain under threat of terrorist attack, we're not under the same threat that we used to be. And we don't have to all of us act as though every moment, at any time, anywhere we are, we're going to need to treat ourselves like we're in an emergency. And it's that feeling that I think has contributed to a lot of changes in our country politically as well. And we can start with taking a breath, turning off our phones, and keeping them on when we want to be interrupted, and recognize that the technology is something that we can use in a smarter way ourselves. But again, I really want to thank you for what you're doing, and I'd be happy to come and talk further and link to all of the things that you advise us to encourage people to know more about. But for our part, we're continuing to look for information. I welcome your listeners to send us messages and suggestions about what we should be doing, and recognizing that this technology really has connected us in some ways and disconnected us in others. And there's a profound disconnect today between what some scientists have understood for a long time, namely that cell phone radiation can damage living systems, and the way we use these devices today and hand them to our babies and our grandchildren.
Well, I want to, first of all, congratulate you on the success of your book, and thank you for helping to really get an important message out there.
And thank you so much. I really appreciate all the good work you do.
Thanks, Deborah. Bye now.
Bye.
Well, we've been listening to my really special guest today, Dr. Deborah Davis. She is the author of Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone I think she's still hanging around. The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation, What the Industry Has Done to Hide It, and How to Protect Your Family. Deborah, you may want to hang up now. Okay, I want to just mention a few things. First of all, I have really been investigating the topic. If you'd like to learn more about some of the impacts of your cell phone, your cordless phone, the wireless technology, then I invite you to go to my website, which is whatwomenmustknow.com, and you'll be able to get an article on the articles page called, it's Hormones, Breast Cancer, EMFs, and Cell Phones. It's a really in-depth article that actually helps to explain how exposure to these frequencies, in fact, is impacting our hormones. And I think we all need to read it. I think it'll really surprise you. In my book, Hormone Heresy, there's an entire chapter about what the impact is of cell phones. It's, in fact, an even more in-depth expose of what's happening. I do think there are solutions that are far beyond just going with a wireless headset, because we're talking about the impact from everything that's emitting these frequencies, from a router to the cordless phone to the antennas that we're all surrounded with. And I particularly use, personally, a technology called molecular resonant effect technology. There is a tremendous amount of science backing it up that stops the damage that's happening to your physiological cells from exposure, immediate exposure to any wireless device. I personally use it on my phones, my wireless router, my computer. You'd want to use it on things like your a big screen plasma TV and all, baby monitors, which I don't recommend you ever use a wireless baby monitor. Anyway, forget about that. That's exposing your infant to the damaging effects to their brain. So we have some proven technology. I'm a big believer in not only addressing a problem, but giving you some practical, proven solutions, solutions that really, really, really work. And I just think that, I just know there's more than just not using the phone next to your head. There's a lot more that we could do, must do. So if you want to get more information about that, then I suggest you just read the articles on my website, whatwomenmustknow.com. And if you want to email me directly, it's drselman@whatwomenmustknow. I'll be happy to send you some more information, literature, and the articles that I've written to give you more specific protection technologies that have passed my litmus test, and certainly I've had other colleagues investigate them, and it's passed their litmus test of effectiveness as well. And I just wouldn't use any of these technologies without adequate protection. So that's just where I am at that. And I, again, want to remind you we are entering our third week of Turn Back the Clock, how to rejuvenate your hormones, your health, and your life, a fantastic free teleseminar series. And it's very easy to get to register. Just go to this website, healthyhormoneseminar.com. That's healthyhormoneseminar.com. If you sign up there, you will not only be sent emails about the event, the lectures, the special offers, all of that stuff, all those goodies, but you don't even have to be able to listen live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, because once you sign up, all of those presentations will be emailed to you directly, and that means you can listen to them whenever you want. You don't have to miss out. I know we all have busy lives, and it isn't necessarily convenient to be there every Tuesday at 8 p.m., and you don't need to. And one last thing, just want to remind you, I will be returning to the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area speaking on November 20th. 2 to 5 p.m. at the Natural Gourmet Institute. I invite you all to come. It's an enlightening seminar. I get to share with you my latest research, edge information, strategy, solutions to any of our hormonal challenges, and I have to say many of our health challenges as well. So I hope you will be joining me. And until next week, always remember to honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.